Hello, this is Will Hardy with Man Talk Radio. We are all about breaking down the walls of race and denomination. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just a few minutes. Enjoy it, share it, but most of all, thank you for listening to the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
Get ready. It's one of America's most important, influential, and respected voices on cultural and political issues. An apologist, Christian political advocate, and author. Here is the founder and chairman of the Citizens for America Foundation, Dr. Chris Hughes.
Welcome to Christian Perspective. I'm Chris Hughes, and we have an exciting show for you today. One of my dear friends is with us, and I can't wait for you to meet him. But before we do that, I want to encourage you to go and sign up to be a member of the Citizens for America Foundation. You can go to citizensforamericafoundation.com, sign up to get our newsletter, learn about events that we have coming up. We have a great trip coming up in just a few weeks, right here in June, to tour Washington, D.C., and learn how our nation was founded on Christian principles, and God's hand is all over monuments and statues or Bible verses all over Washington, D.C. We're taking a trip to Washington the third week of June. I will be leading the tour. I'd love to have you join me. We're taking another trip in September, and we're doing a trip of a lifetime on December 26th. We are going to walk in the footsteps of Jesus in Israel. You can learn about all these trips and so much more at citizensforamericafoundation.com. And, of course, we want to thank the host of our Christian Perspective Studios, Mid-America Baptist Theological Seminary, coming from you, to you, I can't even speak today, y'all, coming to you right here from Memphis, Tennessee. If you are looking for a school to attend, I encourage you to have your children and grandchildren or you yourself check out the College in Mid-America. They can get a great Christian education, learn about whatever field they want to learn about, but there won't be any of this critical race theory or any of this other junk that's being taught in secular schools across the country. Even if you're studying a secular subject, you can learn to have a biblical worldview and then take that into your life after college. Maybe you've already attended college and you're looking to continue your education. Mid-America Baptist Theological Seminary is a great place to get a master's or doctorate degree, and you don't have to be a pastor just because you go to seminary. It's just a great way to get another degree and get it from a biblical and Christian perspective. You can learn more at mabts.edu. That's mabts.edu. Well, speaking of pastors and having a great education, my guest today is Tom Kakadopoulos. And Kakadopoulos, Tom, I butchered your name again. I cannot speak today, Tom.
No, that's fine, Chris.
Having you with me is confusing me. Tom Kakadopoulos has been a friend for many years. Tom, we pass each other kind of going at events all over the place, but especially when I'm in North Carolina, I see a lot of you. Tom is the pastor outreach director for the North Carolina Family Policy Council. And for those of you that are listening across the country, you don't have to live in North Carolina to appreciate what we're going to talk about today. And there are policy councils, and probably, I don't know if you know, Tom, probably every state across the country. And basically, these are Christian organizations that help Christians develop biblical worldviews, and they're really on the forefront of fighting for issues in their individual state capitals. And Tom Kakadopoulos is in North Carolina. He works with pastors and outreach. And Tom, thank you so much for being with us on the Christian Perspective today.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, hopefully I won't get tongue-tied anymore. I've been in the studio several hours today, and my tongue and my brain are not coordinating. But y'all, I just want to tell you, you know, once in a while I get to have a special friend on the show, and Tom is just a man who has impacted me in ways that he doesn't know. He has a powerful testimony. He loves the Lord, and he believes in defending our nation and taking a stand for Jesus in a liberal culture that we have in our country today. And I'm just so honored that you're here with us. Tom, before we talk about some of the issues and what you're doing with the policy council, and I didn't warn you about this, so look out, but I wanted to ask
Not a problem.
Share with our listeners, tell them who Tom is, and then if you don't mind, because I really like this part of it, I always like to ask my guests to share how they came to know Jesus, because we might have people listening who weren't Christians, or maybe they're listening, Tom, and they're Christians, but they think, well, my testimony is not as exciting as somebody else, so I shouldn't tell anybody about Jesus. And what we learn by hearing these testimonies every day is, Jesus touched each of us in a different way, and you don't have to have some exciting, you know, I used to be in jail, or I was in the gutter as a drug addict testimony to be able to touch the lives of somebody else. When Jesus tells us to tell other people about Jesus, He wants us to share our story of what God did in our lives to touch other people. So can you kind of tell us about you and your family and your background? Because you're a Yankee, I think, that ended up in North Carolina. So share your story with us.
I was born and raised in Connecticut and spent a number of years there with family. I have one brother who's a Christian counselor in Warrenton, Virginia, and in Northern Virginia. And he is also pastoring a church in Front Royal. So he's lived in Virginia about 30 years, has three children of his own. And then Lendalyn, my wife, and I have been married 44 years, and we have two adult children and seven grandchildren now. So we're blessed to have them, and I've got two of them actually with me here at the house today as we are finishing up a Memorial Day extended weekend with family. So it's good to have them. I came to know the Lord as my Savior in June the 6th, 1972. Leading up to that was a time where I had the wayward streaks of high school. I was really, I think, more directionless than I was in trouble. And it was a matter of just realizing that my purpose in life had to have more than what I was anticipating and thinking about. And it was at that point I was encouraged to, my mom encouraged me to visit a Jesus coffee house. Now, back in the 60s, late 60s and 70s, that was a thing. And they had coffee houses set up with Bible studies, and people would come in. They would take in the wayward and the helpless. And at that point in my life, while I was neither, I was certainly without purpose. And I knew that there had to be more to it. And I sat down with a young man who'd had a pretty rough background, and he led me to an understanding of what it meant to have a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. And it was at that point I realized I needed to be forgiven of my sin, and that Jesus did that for me. And I received him that night in June, now going on just about, it's just about 50 years ago. So it'll have to be just my second birthday is coming up here in a week. So that's how it happened. But it wasn't until later, and really through college, that I realized there was more to walking in the Christian life than it was about just simply becoming a believer. And fortunately, I got connected with a really good church, First Baptist Church in Atlanta. And my pastor there was very helpful in me getting a solid understanding of what the scriptures meant, what they taught, a belief that the Bible was God's infallible and errant word that I could count on, I could depend on. And at that point in my life, I really needed that. And so as I began my walk as an adult working, and I was at that point in time, I was a project manager for a construction company, the Lord really touched my life, and I yielded to the call to ministry full time. And so that happened in 1977. And a year later, I married my now wife of 44 years, and really the rest is rock and roll history. So that's kind of what led to the place in the journey that began back then that paved the way for me to become a pastor now 40 years and working with candidates and working on policy issues and networking pastors that I do now.
Well, thank you for sharing your testimony. I love what you said about having a relationship with Jesus, because that's what it is. It's not a religion. Christianity is about a relationship with Jesus Christ, and that's what we all need to have. Were you going to college in Atlanta? Is that why you were in Atlanta?
Yes, I was a student at Georgia Tech at the time, and I got connected there, and it was a number of people that really weighed into my life, both through Navigators and some of the other ministries that were on campus, Josh McDowell and others that were actively going from campus to campus, talking about what it meant to be a Christian and what it meant to face the conflict in the world, and what a relationship with God would do to manage that and help that and overcome that. And that was really where I found my foundation. Yes.
You mentioned First Baptist Atlanta. That's Charles Stanley's church, right?
Yes. He was pastor there for right at 50 years. And I came there in 1973, and then I actually started attending the church, and then I was on staff there from 1980 till 1986.
Oh, I didn't realize. So you worked for Charles Stanley.
Oh, yeah. I was on staff there for almost 7 years.
What an incredible experience that had to be to work with him.
Oh, it was terrific. Oh, yeah. And he was directly involved in our lives. There were about, there were probably 15 or 20 of us that had sensed God's call to ministry full time during that 2 or 3 years I was there beforehand. And then he sent me off to Western Seminary in Portland, Oregon. And that's where I got my first 2 years of seminary in. And then I came back on staff really for an internship for about 3 months. And I ended up staying 7 years. And it was that point that after that time frame, my wife and I and our two children moved to California to plant a church, which actually is still going today. It's quite a bit larger than it was when I was there, but it was probably about 200 when we left. And now it's well over 3,000. So we planted that church and then moved back to Charlotte, North Carolina, when both my dad and my wife's mom were both aging, getting ill, and we decided that maybe we'd be open to a change. And it was at that point that my co-pastor that was on staff really encouraged me to pray about what God had for us back east. And not long after that, I got a call from a church to consider coming to Atlanta, to Charlotte. My parents and my in-laws lived in Atlanta at the time. So we thought, now that would be closer than, you know, necessarily moving right to Atlanta. So we took that position in Charlotte and were there on staff at that church for about 20 years, almost 20 years. And during that time, my wife ran for school board in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, and won 2 terms, was elected twice there to the Mecklenburg Board of Education. And our children were in the system for a number of years. And then she got into education policy after that. And we are both kind of half in ministry and half in the policy world right now. So that's what we do.
I think that's ministry too, Tom.
Yes,
I
it
believe
is.
That is
definitely
ministry.
Is.
Well, let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to learn a little bit more about, I didn't know your wife was on school board. We'll talk about that for a minute and then get into what God's been doing in and through you since you left the pastorship. I guess I don't, you might still be pastoring. I don't know. So we'll find out after the break.
This show is brought to you by Generous Joe's, the coffee company with the Christian perspective. This is the answer that Christians and conservatives have been looking for. A coffee company that gives back to causes you care about. Order your coffee today at shopgenerousjoes.org and even subscribe to a subscription coffee plan and never forget the coffee you love or the causes you care about.
Walk in the footsteps of Jesus and see the Bible come to life. This December, join nationally syndicated radio host and founder of the Citizens for America Foundation, Dr. Chris Hughes, on a life-changing trip to Israel. It's one of the world's oldest and most fascinating travel destinations, luring the faithful from all over the world for thousands of years. Visit Jerusalem's religious quarters and explore Christianity's most treasured religious sites, like the Wailing Wall, the Dome of the Rock, and the Via Dolorosa. Walk with Chris through the winding alleyways of Nazareth's Old City and visit ancient Bethlehem, the place of our Savior's birth. Float in the Dead Sea, visit the Sea of Galilee, and the Jewish fortress of Masada. See firsthand where the events of the Bible took place. Touring Israel with Dr. Chris Hughes is a travel odyssey like no other. Visit CitizensForAmericaFoundation.com and get ready for an unforgettable trip and memories that will last a lifetime.
Do you desire to build family relationships that stand the test of time? Does creating a godly family seem like a daunting challenge? You're not alone. I'm Connie Albers, author of Parenting Beyond the Rules and host of Equipped to Be. As a mother of 5, I understand your struggles. For 35 years, I have been helping families just like yours build lasting relationships. I'd like to invite you to tune in to Equipped to Be and visit ConnieAlbers.com, where I share useful tips and proven strategies to help you navigate the seasons of motherhood, faith, and life with confidence and joy.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
On June 8, 1845, Old Hickory died. Wounded by a sword during the Revolutionary War, he later fought the Seminole Indians and in the War of 1812 defeated the British at New Orleans. He was governor of the Florida Territory and is credited with having proposed the name Tennessee at that state's first convention. His beloved wife, Rachel, died just 3 months before he took office as the 7th President of the United States. His name, Andrew Jackson. In reference to the Bible, President Jackson stated, "That book, sir, is the rock upon which our republic rests."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Welcome back to Christian Perspective. We're talking today to the Pastor Outreach Director for North Carolina Families. It's part of the Policy Council organization, which is across the country, Tom Kakadelis. Tom is a dear friend and has been sharing his testimony. And I didn't realize some of the things that I've just learned from him already talking in the show today. Tom, I didn't know that your wife was on the school board, and I share with our audience just about every day. I mean, there are a lot of important elected positions across the country, but I think the school board is one of the most important positions, particularly now with just the sexual deviancy that has entered the school system and some of the terrible curriculum things that are being taught. And for your wife to get elected in Charlotte, which is a pretty liberal area, it's amazing that God gave her the opportunity to be on the school board for 2 terms there in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. Was it a pretty tough ride for her in that town that can be so liberal?
It sure was, but I can assure you that during that time, she was able to have an influence, even though the 9 members of them, 7 were basically left of center and not, I wouldn't say without values. They just were carrying the party line of what they felt like was the best interest of their constituents. And so Lindelin, my wife, had a number of opportunities to make a difference and to get involved. So while she was on the school board, she helped start one of the very first charter schools in North Carolina, Union Academy down in Union County. And she helped get that started, served on the board there while she was actually on the district school board. And then she began the process of moving over into the private voucher, private scholarship world, where private money was provided for 500 families in North Carolina to attend schools of their choice. So Ted Forsman and then some other very wealthy people provided that money, and then she managed about $3.5 million to help about 500 families send their children to other schools other than, well, the school of their choice. And so she worked with them for probably about 5 years, and then went to work for the John Locke Foundation as an education policy consultant. So she really went through the system, if you will, learning about what education looks like from a public government perspective, and then what it's like from the private world, and has worked with other organizations since to help establish both charter schools, and now she heads a charter school organization here in North Carolina called the Coalition for Charter Schools, Public Charter Schools. So she started that about 2018 and has been serving as executive director since then. So we are in the fray, and we are fine with being in the fray. And that's one of the reasons why we continue to support every type of educational opportunity. But we are concerned about what's been happening, especially in the last 5 or 10 years, with what's been published and what school systems are adopting as procedure as well as regulation to govern their schools. And it's a big concern.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. So, Tom, you did something most pastors don't have the courage to do. You got engaged in the arena of public policy and politics. What led you to that? And for pastors listening, what do they need to do? Because you realized something needed to be done in that arena. What was the spark that got you to kind of shift gears and get involved in this arena?
Well, I think scripture first. I was prompted by the fact that when the wicked rule, the people mourn, but when the righteous are in power, the people rejoice. And so my goal has always been to help discover and encourage people who are spiritually sensitive, governance engaged, morally conscious, and willing to put their lives, their families together to be servants, leaders, citizens. And that's what I try to do, is help to see and help pastors to identify, if not themselves, people within their congregations who are willing to serve in these different roles. There are about 18,000 positions were available to people on election day that they could serve in places all over the country, from the top of the ticket all the way down to the bottom of the ticket, without being particularly partisan, because that's not my goal. I am personally partisan, but when it comes to values and what the Bible teaches, my goal is to find people who are basically fit the qualifications of Exodus 18 that Jethro gave as guidelines to Moses regarding leadership. And he instructed him to find able leaders who feared God, who were honest, and would not take a bribe. And those four qualifications are what we look for people to serve throughout our nation, and particularly in North Carolina, but throughout our nation, that will be the kind of citizen leaders that people can look up to and people can serve with and they can join with. They may not be the head of the ticket. They may not be the candidate, but there's so many other positions behind the candidate that can help those candidates become successful and be good governors, not just good candidates. So we want them to get engaged, and there's a whole category that George Barna has identified as what's called sage cons. Sage cons. Those are spiritually active, governance engaged conservatives. Sage cons. That's the acronym SAGE cons, meaning spiritually active, governance engaged conservatives. Now, there are about 22 million of them in the country. Now, we can't win an election with them alone, but most elections can't be won without them. And so there's a real effort on the part of us that whether we're Democrats, Republicans, independents, or whatever, we are people who want to be engaged and want to be involved at that level. And so that's what I do, Chris, is I help to identify those people, encourage pastors to find out how to get involved, because my experience has been if I don't do it, then I'm going to be waiting for somebody else to do what God has called every citizen to do. And fortunately, we live in a constitutional republic where we can be involved to that level. There are so many people around the world that live under oppressive regimes, and they can't. So where we are able as Christians, we need to continue to stay engaged and to become informed, and I like to do both.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to repeat, because you just said to do what God has called every citizen to do. What has he called them to do, and do you really believe that it's a calling?
Yes, I do. I think when we live with families as leaders within our families, whether we're single parent, whether we're fostering, whether we are we raise what is maybe called a traditional nuclear family, or we don't. The fact is that our families live under the Constitution of the United States and of each state. And it's our responsibility within that working to rule as righteous people. And if we don't take that seriously, that responsibility, then we're ignoring a part of what God has called us to do. First and foremost is the family. Secondly is the church. And then thirdly is the government that we are under. And we're to obey those that are in authority over us, or we're to change those that are in authority over us. So we have the privilege and the responsibility of voting. And so by being informed, getting engaged, we not only have quality candidates that can serve, but we also can get others to vote and elect those people to serve as well.
Boy, that is so good. Being informed and engaging. And we failed. I know you're working with pastors, but I think many pastors have failed in that area of informing Christians. And of course, we can't pass it off just on pastors. I mean, there's no excuse for any Christian not being informed on what's going on in society today and then being engaged once we are informed. So, Tom, you now work with an organization called NC Family or the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization?
Sure. We are an organization that basically seeks to, we envision a nation where life is cherished, families are prospering, and the church is expanding its influence to see people rescued from the clutches of the enemy. So we work hard to keep people informed on those issues that would affect us, especially if they're becoming regulation or becoming law or statute. So what we do is try to get to the legislators before they become, things are, if you will, before the sausage is made, before the legislation is actually finished, so that we're able to not only explain what we believe is biblical about why they should do one thing or another, but also to then help them craft the kinds of legislation that protects the family and encourages it, encourages the work of ministry where it's possible to protect our freedoms, particularly our religious freedoms, and then to help others become aware of the importance of their own engagement on these things. So that's what NC Family does, and I work as the pastoral connector to get pastors together, particularly sometimes those that are different on many levels, but they agree on values. And so that's what I attempt to do.
Folks, we're talking to Tom Takadelis. He is the pastor outreach director for North Carolina Family Policy Council. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about what his organization is doing and other organizations like his across the country to make Christians aware of the issues that affect us today. Stick around.
The United States of America has a strong Christian heritage, but most Americans don't know the truly important role that God and the Bible played in the founding of this great nation. This June, join nationally syndicated radio host and founder of the Citizens for America Foundation, Dr. Chris Hughes, for four amazing days in our nation's capital. With Chris, you'll embark on a journey of discovering the hidden secrets of Washington, D.C., and rediscover much of America's forgotten Christian heritage. Your tour will include an up-close and personal look at the nation's establishment and how it's evolved over the centuries. Learn about the government and the men who helped forge this new kind of republic, one that acknowledged the Creator from its very inception. Know the truth about the creation of the United States of America, about the faith of the founding fathers, and how Christian principles were used to establish this form of government. Visit citizensforamericafoundation.com today and secure your spot to join Chris Hughes in Washington, D.C. this June.
This show is brought to you by Generous Joe's, the coffee company with the Christian perspective. This is the answer that Christians and conservatives have been looking for. A coffee company that gives back to causes you care about. Order your coffee today at shopgenerousjoes.org and even subscribe to a subscription coffee plan and never forget the coffee you love or the causes you care about.
The Conservative Baptist Network is a dynamic movement of Southern Baptist pastors, churches, and Christians committed to standing for the sufficiency of God's Word in the face of a culture of compromise. The passion and prayer of the Conservative Baptist Network is that God would help Southern Baptists stay bold for the gospel so that we might see revival in America and the world reached for Christ. Visit our website today at conservativebaptistnetwork.com to learn how you and your church can join and support this exciting movement.
Welcome back to Christian Perspective. I'm Chris Hughes. My guest today is Tom Takadelis. He is with the North Carolina Family Policy Council, but there are family policy councils all over the country and in your state, and I'm sure Tom will be happy to connect you. If you're not aware, you need to sign up to get the newsletters and know specifically what is happening in your individual organization across your state and across the nation.
Tom, I'm going to kind of go down a rabbit trail and come back. I've got so many questions I'm thinking of as we're talking to you. But just for our listeners to know the policy council, I may be wrong about this, so correct me. Is this an offshoot of when Dr. Dobson was at Focus of the Family? And I think he started the Family Research Council, which is now headed up by Tony Perkins. Are these like miniature family research councils in individual states across the country?
There's a lot of similarities, yes. And I the answer is basically yes. I think what happened was when Dr. Dobson was making the trip in the late 70s, early 80s, he was going back to Washington, D.C. all the time from Los Angeles, where he lived. And he realized that that trip was becoming very difficult to do. And so he decided to start an organization that was based in D.C. that would be similar to what we now do with Family Policy Council here in North Carolina. And so through a couple of different leadership development phases, Gary Bauer took that over, I think, in the early 80s. And when he did, he really began to help Christian values be represented in the district, especially on the Hill and in different avenues of influence in D.C. So the Family Research Council developed there, but then they realized that each state capital had the same concerns. And so family policy councils began to emerge some 30 years ago that began to represent values, biblical Christian values, in the state capitals around the nation. And right now, I think there are 46 states that have FPCs, family policy councils. And there is an alliance of family policy councils called the Alliance of the Family Policy Alliance that networks all of those statewide organizations together. Now, our director and president is John Rustin here in North Carolina, and he, along with our general counsel and lobbyists, we get involved at the state legislature here, particularly when they're in session and when committees are meeting, to testify on behalf of life, family, liberty, particularly religious liberty and other things that are key ingredients to keeping our freedoms intact. And that's what John does there on in Raleigh most of the time. My role.
So they're involved, if I can interrupt then, so they're sure. involved every day on state capitals, and in your case in North Carolina, not just informing the public, but you're actually there representing God, if you will, in the state capitol on issues like you're saying family and freedom of speech and maybe freedom of religion. You're testifying as policy matter experts before the legislature then, not just sending information to other people, but actually working with legislators on a daily basis.
Yes, and our relationships extend now nearly 30 years. So many of our team has been in Raleigh for a longer period of time than most of the legislators have. So senators and House members both seek us out to find out where we stand on these issues and how they can best represent their Christian values.
Are they registered lobbyists or just policy matter experts?
No, they're both. They're definitely registered lobbyists, and they are involved on the Plated Building on Jones Street here in Raleigh throughout the year.
Are you involved or is the organization involved like in making candidate endorsements and involved in campaigns as well?
We don't do the endorsement part on the C3 side because we're an educational institution that provides information and research for lawmakers as well as the public to know what the issues are and how to best address. We do have what's called the North Carolina Family Policy Council Action Group, or NC Family Action. That's a C4, and it's during the election season when we get to the general election that organization, the C4 side, can endorse candidates.
So, folks, if you're listening, Tom's talking about a designation by the IRS or Internal Revenue Service, where his organization is what's called a 501c3, which is a tax deductible. If you make contributions to them, they are tax deductible for the purposes of education. So you might want to go to their website and see how you can support the important ministry work that they're doing. What is your website address, Tom?
It's ncfamily.org, ncfamily.org.
So share with us. So John's there testifying, and you have
so
your
action group. Gary's our general counsel. Gary Royal has been there about 25 years. Both of them work diligently every day to stay on top of things. About 3,000 plus bills are introduced every long session to the General Assembly. And it's our job to go through those bills and determine which ones will have the most impact on family and faith and freedom. So we go through those bills and really identify. And right now we're down to about 13 bills that are in the process. Either they've been vetoed by the governor or they're in the process of being voted upon. We have one right now that is probably on the floor of the Senate right now on parental right. And that's a huge issue that's been going on in the last, as you know, the last few years because of what the campaign was in Virginia last year, and it is this year in North Carolina, and will continue to be, I think, through the presidential election soon. So the goal is to reinforce the rights of parents to keep in, to be informed about what's happening in the classrooms in our public schools with regard to their children, so that nothing is done there without the express consent of the parent. And so that's what's going on right now. So in real time, our regular emails keep you informed on what's happening and kind of the pathway that we're going down. Our, we do a semi-annual newsletter that looks like a magazine. It's called North Carolina Family, and it's the magazine that we produce on key issues that comes out usually every 5-6 months, something like that. And then on a regular basis, we inform folks of what they can do to make their voices known in Raleigh, as do other family policy councils in their state capitals, as to what's going on and what they need to do to let their legislators know their feelings about those things. We continue to keep people informed on that on a regular basis so that they're able to exercise their God-given responsibilities as citizens.
And that's such important work. So, Tom, testifying and doing research on bills, but you also have a very important role with the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Tell us what you're doing and how that's impacting the culture for Jesus.
Right. Well, 2 years ago, we decided that we needed to take the message of getting engaged out to the state itself. And so I began the process of traveling through all 100 counties in the state. I've been to about 72 of them now in the last 2 years with the purpose of getting together groups of pastors and individuals who are leaders within their communities to take an interest in the very things that will affect not only their county, but particularly their state in certain issues. And I do that with what we call pastor briefings and pastor seminars. And we call them salt and light pastor seminars. We not only provide a resource for parent pastors to do that in their communities, but we also invite them to come to Raleigh to have a pastor's seminar there where they get a chance to meet legislators, learn what it means to be a lobbyist and what's involved with advocacy. We teach them about what their limitations are, what a biblical, the five pillars of the biblical worldview, and then we talk to them about how they can teach that as well as act on that with their congregations through community impact teams and other resources. So that's what I do on the pastor side. And then we began a high school student seminar called Salt and Light Student Seminar, and that provides a way for students to come to Raleigh with their group. We'd like to encourage 10 to 15 students to come with chaperones. And then they, we take them through an orientation of biblical worldview. We take them through understanding advocacy, and we zoom them in if we can't physically take them in. We zoom them into a Senate or House committee meeting where the debate is going on particular issues of importance. Then we feed them a little lunch, and they, when we go down to the legislature to tour the legislative buildings, meet their senators and House members, and then give them a tour down there to get a familiarity with a building that really is their building. It's really the people's building. And so it gives them a chance to get familiar, how they can get involved, and what they can do to make a difference. So it's with the student seminar and the pastor seminars that I've really taken more responsibility of the education of what our government is like, what our Constitution, how our Constitution works, and what we can do as individuals to stay engaged.
So you're actually involved in that. That's under your division then, even with what the students are doing.
Right.
When you're traveling, Tom, across the state, because it's probably the same for our listeners across the country, what kind of reception are you getting from pastors? I know when I travel a lot of pastors are like, wait, we don't want to get involved in politics. We believe in separation of church and state. Do you run into that? And how do you overcome that with a pastor?
That's a great question. And how we overcome it is really pretty easy. When you talk with pastors, you usually end up with a conversation around what matters to them most. And I usually start with the top of mind issues that they feel are affecting the culture today. And we all know that the basic answer to the question is a relationship with Jesus Christ. If people knew the Lord, much of the problems in our culture would go away. But the legislative process and the reason we have constitutions and laws and the things that we do to enforce them is because everybody is not a Christian and everybody doesn't respond to the spiritual promptings of the Holy Spirit. So they don't know. And so without having an influence over it, you are left to whatever those who carry different values than you have to be the ones that influence it. So I try to help pastors see we're not asking them to become partisan. We're asking them to stay engaged, educate their congregations. We give them tools to do that. And we help them with, you know, lessons like Exodus 18. How do you go to the polls and vote? Well, you go to the polls to vote for people who have those four qualifications, those four character qualities. They are able, they fear God, they're honest, and they won't take a bribe. Those are the kinds of people we want to be serving. So we encourage them to identify those people within their churches, start a community impact team, which allows them to stay informed. It's a place where information can get funneled to the congregation. We give them information about nonpartisan voter guides, information about bills that are going on, and help them in the process so that they're not left to try to invent all of that information or to research it all themselves. And that way, we become the resource that helps them to get that done. And we have well over 400 churches in the state and probably as many as 800 that are influenced by the things that we are providing, resources we deliver, and also our general election voter guides that we ship to churches to hand out to people to know where do they stand on the issues that matter to church and Christian believers. That's what we try to do to keep them informed. Yes, pastors have a different level of acceptance to that, but you know, relationships matter. And by helping to build those relationships over time, I am, among others, able to help them further along in the process where they might be a little bit hesitant to be partisan. They aren't going to be as hesitant to stand for their values. And we need people right now to stand courageously for their values.
Well, we're talking about how Christians can stand courageously for their values. Take some notes, because when we come back, we're going to have Tom tell us some specific things that we can do to impact the culture for Jesus. Stick around. We'll be right back.
A brand is a design, name, symbol, or any other feature that sets an organization or individual apart. Bringing that brand to life can be difficult. But Diggs Design is here to help you take that next step or re-energize your current situation.
We can handle logos, social media graphics, cards, weddings, clothing, prints, photo editing, and much more. Give us a call today at 704-984-2432 or connect with Diggs Design on social media.
In a world crowded with viewpoints and voices.
Critical condition after a...
I believe the message of this...
Financial problem...
Only one voice matters, God's. At the College at Mid-America and Mid-America Seminary, we equip leaders to think from a biblical worldview, online or on our Memphis campus. Check out the College at Mid-America and Mid-America Baptist Theological Seminary at mabts.edu and be equipped to light the way.
This show is brought to you by Generous Joe's, the coffee company with the Christian perspective. This is the answer that Christians and conservatives have been looking for. A coffee company that gives back to causes you care about. Order your coffee today at shopgenerousjoes.org and even subscribe to a subscription coffee plan and never forget the coffee you love or the causes you care about.
Do you desire to build family relationships that stand the test of time? Does creating a godly family seem like a daunting challenge? You're not alone. I'm Connie Albers, author of Parenting Beyond the Rules and host of Equipped to Be. As a mother of five, I understand your struggles. For 35 years, I have been helping families just like yours build lasting relationships. I'd like to invite you to tune in to Equipped to Be and visit ConnieAlbers.com, where I share useful tips and proven strategies to help you navigate the seasons of motherhood, faith, and life with confidence and joy.
The United States of America has a strong Christian heritage, but most Americans don't know the truly important role that God and the Bible played in the founding of this great nation. This June, join nationally syndicated radio host and founder of the Citizens for America Foundation, Dr. Chris Hughes, for four amazing days in our nation's capital. With Chris, you'll embark on a journey of discovering the hidden secrets of Washington, D.C., and rediscover much of America's forgotten Christian heritage. Your tour will include an up-close and personal look at the nation's establishment and how it's evolved over the centuries. Learn about the government and the men who helped forge this new kind of republic, one that acknowledged the Creator from its very inception. Know the truth about the creation of the United States of America, about the faith of the founding fathers, and how Christian principles were used to establish this form of government. Visit citizensforamericafoundation.com today and secure your spot to join Chris Hughes in Washington, D.C. this June.
Welcome back to Christian Perspective. I'm Chris Hughes. My guest today is Tom Cacadelis. Tom is the Pastor Outreach Director for the North Carolina Policy Council. And even though the work he's doing is in North Carolina, the principles
that he is sharing, no matter where you live in the country today, if you're listening, apply to you as well and to your church. Tom, you mentioned, something called community impact teams. And you talked a little bit about it, but can you go in greater detail of what that is and how can someone start those in their own church?
Yes, there are four aspects to a community impact team, and it requires really very little to get it started. What happens is not like a committee, but more like an action team. We encourage a couple or a couple of individuals to get together who are already interested in seeing what's happening in the culture. Somebody from the church that can help be the liaison to the pastor and will help the pastor stay informed on the issues that matter. And so what we do is identify those two people, recruit two others, and those four people become the basis of a community impact team that could grow larger over the years. But that impact team carries four responsibilities. First, to become informed. The most important thing is to get good information. We want to provide resources and information, not just from North Carolina Family Policy Council, but for example, we have a parent guide on transgender and what you do as a parent to walk a child that you have a question about or there's some issue that's facing that family. This is a guide that's produced by the Minnesota Family Policy Council. Excellent tool. It's a parent's guide to transgenderism. Then but through the information and resources that are available with Family Research Council, as well as our own, we provide those resources as a way to get that community impact team up and going. I come and do training. I do training both by Zoom or by phone calls, and I actually do them in person now that we're moving along in time with the issues that have held us back in the last few years. But we are now doing in-person training. So I come and do those trainings, and that helps the team begin to coagulate, gets them focused, gets them informed through this second step, which is we call equipping. And then the equipping step is just to help not only inform them of things, but what can you do to help equip the congregation and also to provide resources to the pastor for how to approach the subjects of teaching on these issues. Sometimes teaching about it is one thing. Sometimes having a dialogue about it. Sometimes it's good to have a conversation like we did at a church in Aberdeen this past couple Sundays ago. We had a dialogue conversation, three people on the panel plus the pastor, and we discussed the whole issue of abortion in a post-Roe versus Wade era, and how would the church respond to people who have had abortions? How do we help people get resources to avoid that process? What about fostering children and adopting children? So these are all tools that we can provide to the churches to talk about very difficult subjects. Then the third step is to alert. So when something comes up in Raleigh, we try to get them in real time information as to what they can do to address the concerns that are out there. So we inform, we equip, we alert, and then we mobilize. That's the fourth phase of the community impact team. And the resource manual that comes along with the training provides them with ways that they can mobilize. Sometimes it's not around a hot issue. Sometimes it's simply building a bridge. For example, how can we do vacation Bible school together with a church that's historically Black or historically white? And how could we work with pastors who don't necessarily agree with us on some of the other issues, but agree with us on pro-life? So we look at ways that we can build a bridge between churches and pastors to help them work together. That is the engagement and mobilization process that is so important for community impact teams to do. And then we utilize opportunities that come up where parents have a circumstance that has come up where they have to address a concern in their school. We help them formulate a way to approach it in a biblical and Christian with a loving attitude towards others, but not backing off of our values. And that way we're able to make our statement, by saying what we believe is best for the community, not just because the Bible says it, but what we believe is better for the entire community if we govern ourselves this way or that. That way, the community impact team continues to have an influence on the community, even when there's not a hot issue in front of them. So the community impact team has four different responsibilities: to inform, equip, mobilize, and engage and mobilize. So that those are the things that those teams actually do to keep their churches informed of what's going on.
Boy, and that's needed. So if they want to get more information, what's your website address again?
ncfamily.org, ncfamily.org. And they can get folks, community impact team information as well as any of the other things that we talked about by coming
folks,
to that.
This stuff is not just specific to North Carolina. This is stuff you can use all over the country. And I know Tom has a passion, even though he's working mainly in North Carolina, for pastors and churches, and he will help you no matter where you are. Tom, we've got about 3 minutes, so you may not be able to cover this in 3 minutes, but several times today you've mentioned the pillars of biblical worldview. Can you explain what that is?
Yes, they're basically, you can teach the subject of a biblical worldview a number of different ways, but because of what I've learned over the years, I believe there's five basic pillars that establish what a biblical or what a worldview is. They're basically the tenets of a religion or of a belief system that you carry that you may not even know you have, but that you believe certain things are true, even though you may not even know how you've come to those conclusions. Those five pillars are origin, morality — that's the determination of what's right and wrong, how do I go about determining that — what is the problem in the world, what is the problem, what is the solution for that problem in the world, and then what is the ultimate destiny of humankind. So we talk about the origin of humankind, the problems of the determination of morality, which is the determination of is there right and wrong and how is it determined. What is the essential problem in the world today? What is the ultimate solution to that problem? And then what is the destiny of humankind? So those five pillars determine what you believe about pretty much everything in the lens through which you view the world. So from a Christian worldview, that is that we believe that creation was done by God, starts with God, it's for his purpose and his glory. That's the origin question answered. Then morality, we obviously know, we utilize the Bible as the standard for that. But then there are other things within the Bible specifically that help us to form the framework for which we determine what is right and wrong. But the ultimate problem in the world is sin. And we talk about what that means in an understanding of biblical worldview and how the enemy of our souls determines what that problem is and how we confront it. And then the solution we understand to be the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ and his life that is becomes our life at the time we receive him, with the ultimate destiny of being that one day we will be with the Lord in heaven. Now, that's the biblical worldview. That's a very fast view of it. But then when you talk about what's going on today with woke religion, you realize that evolution has been being taught in our classes and in our school system for many, many, many moons now, decades. And that evolutionary system teaches that there really is no God. There really is only what I determine God to be. And that morality is determined by my truth, not your truth. You have your truth. I have my truth. We determine what our own truth is, and we do what we believe is best for ourselves. According to the Bible, that would be like judges. Every person did that which was right in their own eyes. And then the ultimate problem with woke religion and what I believe to be cultural Marxism is that injustice is the problem, not sin. So you can't really identify an individual and you can't really find yourself freed of the problem because injustice is assigned to groups, not to individuals. So injustice is something out there that is determined by whatever anybody thinks is injustice, and that the solution for injustice is revolution, and that the ultimate answer, the ultimate destiny of someone in the woke religion is utopia. Now, in those five pillars, we then realize how much of that has been determined by Marxism. And that's why for another show on another day, you and I might want to talk about what cultural Marxism is, who these people are that were at the root of it, why our educational system has embraced it, and what is ultimately the fruit of that. And that would be for a much longer conversation.
Well, we need to have you back to do that. Tom, it has been such an honor to have you on the show today, and thank you for taking time away from your grandbabies. I'm going to have to go buy them a present for them letting their grandfather be with us for an hour today. Thank you so much for being on the Christian Perspective.
My pleasure, Chris, and I really do appreciate your effort to get the word out to people to stay engaged, to be prayerful for our nation, but not to wait for somebody else to do what you can do.
Folks, if you want to learn more about what Tom is doing, you can visit ncfamily.org. That's ncfamily.org. Of course, you can listen to this later today. It'll be released on podcast format, and you can share on social media with your friends and your pastor to really hear about the work that Tom and his group are doing and what you can do within your church across the nation. Thank you for listening here each and every day. We appreciate it. Now let's take what we learned and impact the culture for Jesus.
Thank you for listening. The Christian Perspective with Chris Hughes. Learn more about impacting the culture for Jesus.
Visit citizensforamericafoundation.com.
This is the Truth Network.